Thank you for joining us and welcome to another edition of Answers Network. I'm your host, Alan Cardoza. And before we get to our topic today, I want to share some of my thoughts on Father's Day, which is celebrated on the third Sunday of June in the United States, Canada, the United Kingdom, and five other countries around the world. Now, having personally been blessed with two very different father figures in my life, I'm very grateful for their differences, their patience, dedication, and discipline that had such an influence on the man that I became. Now, with that said, my message to all is the role of father is incredibly valuable. Fathers and father figures influence the lives of children in many ways that have a lasting impact on all of our future. Many have fought and continue to fight for our freedom and for a better future for their own kids and for all children around the world. Many are working to establish or maintain the safest, healthiest, most beneficial environment possible so their children can freely learn, discover self-sufficiency, and thrive. I am grateful beyond measure for their commitment to the precious lives they touch. So for all of you out there, happy Father's Day. Now, our topic today, it's one that few want to talk about. But not talking about it doesn't make it go away. Now, personally, having rescued children and adults from satanic cults and human trafficking rings, I have seen firsthand the emotional effects many of the victims go through. Joining us to discuss how these victims can survive the trauma of their horrific experiences is Eileen Aventi, a psychotherapist with a specialty in helping people in a category that until recently has not been widely known. Ms. Aventi has over 30 years' experience working with victims of organized abuse, that is, abuse involving mind control, human trafficking, and ritual abuse. Eileen is a consultant and conference speaker in the clinical understanding of ritual abuse, mind control, dissociative identity disorder, and organized abuse, which includes sex trafficking. She holds a diplomat in clinical social work. Now, she worked on ritual abuse and sex trafficking legislations in Michigan and consulted for other state legislative teams to help put in better laws to deal with this. She helped develop and run a safe house for ritual abuse survivors who were being pursued by their predators. Eileen is currently on the board of survivorship.org, which supports survivors of extreme child abuse, including mind control, sadistic, and ritualistic abuse. She developed the migration model, a process to undo mind control in ritual abuse survivors, and regularly provides multi-day intensives for survivors and their therapists using this model. Now, although semi-retired and no longer taking new clients, she regularly consults on cases for therapists and is writing her first book, Ritual Abuse and Mind Control, a self-help guide to recovery. She also co-wrote about her work in Women Therapists on Healing, both of which come out this winter. She is also developing online courses for survivors to help in their recovery and for clinicians to further their treatment understanding of this population. Eileen, welcome to Answers Network.
Thank you. It's really a pleasure to be here. And I most of all want to tell any survivors out there that there is help. You can come out of the shadows. That people all over the world are coming out. It's the time. And I've been watching it happen over a period of 30 years, but it's really much more intense recently. Therapists everywhere are puzzled in knowing what to do. They're not as trained as they need to be because it's a very specialized niche. It's a form of post-traumatic stress disorder, but in really extreme time ways. I want to encourage anybody out there who is listening, who either knows somebody or someone who perhaps thinks that they've come from this background and isn't sure, or they know that there is help and you can start coming out. And I realize the perils of doing that with perpetrator groups out there, but I want to encourage you.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the abuse itself before we talk into about some of the treatments and the therapies. If there's somebody out there that doesn't really understand what it is, this is, share a little bit about it. And again, we both have said that for the most part, it's been kept in the shadows, for a very long time. Share a little bit so that people understand what it is we're talking about.
We're talking about organized perpetrating groups. There are survivors out there that have been born into these groups or have been swept up into them in early childhood. They have gone through terrible abuse, tortures of different kinds. And the perpetrating groups intentionally do this in order to split the mind, in order to be able to gain control over the mind, to be able to use them for their gains. It sounds absolutely horrible to think about anybody doing that to another human being, but unfortunately, it's pretty perfected.
Now, share a little bit. Now, what people may not understand, I mean, every once in a while, we get something that hits the news. If we go back, I think that like Jonestown would be an example. Share a little bit about something like that, and so that we can let people know that although that one hit the news, it doesn't mean it was the only one.
No, that's right. The mind control is really the crux of it, because these organized groups deliberately create and train personality parts inside once they split them to do their bidding. They create structures in the personality. They create ways to be able to access those parts to do not only sex trafficking. That is part of it, but it's not the main part of it. It's for perhaps government reasons. It could be for espionage. It can be for passing drugs. It can be different kinds of organized, sadistic types of behaviors and groups that want a survivor to be so programmed, so controlled, that they will never tell. They will never tell. So it's the perfect crime because your survivor, your person you're working with, is really controlled that much to be swept up into these groups and not have the ability or even awareness many of the times that they are being used like this. And so if you were to ask them in, say, a court of law whether this is happening, they may not even know. Or they may have been worked over by their groups to make sure that they don't tell.
Now, we mentioned a little bit about DID, dissociative identity disorder.
Right.
Share a little bit about what that is and how it's done.
DID or dissociative identity disorder is the old name for it is multiple personality. And in the mental health field, we didn't think there was that much. I remember studying it briefly. There's a couple pages in the DSM manual for mental health disorders. It's been broadened as the years have gone on where they have redone that manual. But many therapists don't believe that it really happens that often because they're not tuned in completely to the extreme amount of PTSD. DID or dissociative identity disorder can only happen in children under about 5 or 6 years old, where they do not have a real sense of the world yet. They get confused when abuse happens to them. They are overwhelmed by extreme abuse. And so they have to somehow split up that event and put it in different places in their mind. And the abuse also occurs randomly by various people in different ways, at different times, different parts of the week. So the child has no ability to kind of fall back into that same space and say, oh yeah, this always happens on Saturday night by so-and-so. You can kind of cope with that. But if you've got random things going on all the time, the mind just goes, wait, tilt, I can't cope with this. So I have to split to somehow cope with all of these varying factors. So that produces DID. And then the perpetrating group, now this is intentional. Now DID doesn't always happen intentionally. And people can have DID from other reasons, but we're talking about intentional splitting. Right. The person is, the perpetrator then is able to kind of grab a hold of those particular personality parts and say, okay, I want you to do this. I want you to do this. And then they will assign different kinds of ways to be able to access that part. And some of those ways to access are becoming universal. So that perpetrating groups know that if they use a particular word or code or whatever, they can access certain parts to do certain things. This sounds absolutely horrible. Right. and honestly, I didn't believe it for a long time. But there's been so much research done on it now. And there was an extreme abuse survey that was conducted in 2007 by four clinical researchers, some in Germany. And it was over a period of a year. And 2,000 respondents came forward and talked about how they are victims of organized abuse. There was a lot of protections given to them as they answered because they were scared to death to talk about it. But they did admit it. And there's a lot of study on it since then about that particular survey, but it's called the Extreme Abuse Survey. And I would encourage people who might be interested to look at that.
I know, I will do that. Now DID is one particular form of disassociation. How is DID different from other forms of disassociation in that respect?
Well, dissociation is kind of on a continuum. If you think about basic dissociation, it would be like if you were daydreaming and say, for instance, you were driving down the road in your car and you're thinking about something else and you just kind of automatically, innately know that you need to stop at the stop sign. And the body just knows, the mind just knows, and you just go, okay, you know, but you're not conscious of it. So there's a dissociative quality to that, but everybody does that. The next level is PTSD, and you can have people say, for instance, from war or from a traumatic event that's been overwhelming to them, either in childhood or as adulthood, and they might split just once. And it accounts for why some, say, for instance, war survivors will return home and be with their families and then have night sweats and nightmares at night because they're remembering, but then they compartmentalize it and push it down. After a while, they can't really, after some time, and they do have to get some help for it, and we have great help for PTSD. So that's another level. That's splitting once. Then there's dissociative identity disorder, which is a full-blown, which is splitting many times over. And then with ritual abuse, beyond that, connected to DID, it's intentional. So it's an extreme form of PTSD.
You know, as you were saying that, it dawned on me when you mentioned the first stage of disassociation.
Right.
You know, when you mentioned the first stage, it hit me that that used to happen to me a lot, in the sense that, and I thought, or I I called it highway hypnosis.
Right.
I constantly drove the same thing while I was tired and things like that. And I would sort of daydream a little bit. And all of a sudden I would be at my destination and I wouldn't remember changing freeways or anything.
Right, exactly.
So that's the first stage. I'm glad I didn't get too far beyond that one.
Right.
Let's talk about some of the, I was going to go into some of the therapies, but I'm looking at the time. We've got a few minutes before we're going to go to our first break.
Okay.
So let's talk about you.
Okay.
And it's, what prepared you? I mean, before you encountered your first client with this kind of background, I mean, to be willing and able to work with this kind of client, how did you get into the field as far as this specialty is concerned? And, is there something from your background that led you into this? What brought you to this particular specialty?
Right. First of all, I don't have this background. I did not come from an abuse background of any kind. So my family was a good family. My first job out of graduate school was in clinical social work and an oncology unit, which at that time, I was really gravitating toward the people who were going to die. And so there was a lot of trauma in all the people, survivors and family members. As I worked with them and also helped develop a local hospice here in Michigan, I was surrounded by death and dying. And I had to learn how to cope with that and get past my initial shock of it all and my grief of it all. Because I knew that people can do that, but I didn't know how to do that. So I sought help from other clinicians who had some wisdom on this and other nurses and medical staff who worked with it all the time. And I came across a book that talked about if you could last about 2 years or beyond, you're going to probably stay in it for good. And so I just pushed and pushed and pushed until I did. And I began to then sort out different ways that people handled things and developed methodologies to intervene quickly and to help people at the bedside. I went into private practice after that, simultaneously, and started working with the bereaved people.
Mm-hmm.
And I started coming across some unusual manifestations of trauma that I didn't know. I mean, those of us in the field, especially in ritual abuse, all will say that you will start finding different manifestations of ways people behave that are just not fitting in to the classic way that PTSD can happen. And we were asking questions about it. We didn't know what this was. I remember talking to a survivor of it, because I started to work to try to find other clinicians to really understand this. And I wasn't finding very many people locally. So I reached out nationally to be able to figure this out. Because I was determined. I thought, I used to work with people that were dying. They didn't have a chance at life anymore. These people wanted to live, wanted to recover. And I thought, these people have a chance. These people have a chance. And I got to figure out how to help them. And I didn't know. I didn't know what to do. So little by little, I started to acquire knowledge and, eventually started teaching at conferences. Clinicians were coming to me, trying to figure out what is this particular kind of case that I'm coming across. These were seasoned people. We were all seasoned and we didn't understand what this was. So, little by little, I became an expert at it, really. I mean, I think I don't know how I got into this, but at the same time, I'm a very an inquisitive mind. I'm a very analytical mind. And I need to break it down. I need to figure out what is going on that's different and why. What is the root of this? And once I understand how these groups started, I started to understand these groups and how they program and they mind control. I thought, okay, I'm seeing this. I'm seeing this. I can intervene here. I can make a difference here. And it, eventually, I you mentioned about the migration model that I developed. That is a model that I came upon about 10, 12 years ago, just experimenting, just trying to understand how to undo the mind control, because I thought there's got to be a way to do that. And I wasn't sure what, and I looked around as far as research, and people were kind of talking about it, but they weren't sure either. And so I finally was hitting upon a certain methodology and eventually started to do it on a regular basis. And I'm still experimenting with it, but and for people that want to know more, they can look on my website about that.
We're speaking with Eileen Aveni, and what we're talking about is, if you're just tuning in, we're talking about various times of when people are abused, but it's more of an organizational type of abuse where it's planned out. So Eileen, first of all, I love the fact that you're making a difference. And I think that's what I get where, when you mentioned the part about, you know, as far as why are you still doing this? Because I think for a lot of us, you know, you start doing something and you realize that you're making a difference in the lives of others. And it's almost like you can't stop. So thank you for continuing to do this. And for everybody out there, we're going to take a break, but we'll be right back. You're listening to or you're watching Answers Network.
Conflict International are experts at uncovering the truth. Our specialist team has decades of experience in providing a range of bespoke investigation and intelligence services to companies and individuals. Whether you need professional screening or background checks of employees, due diligence of potential clients or business partners, asset tracing services, or surveillance, Conflict International has a rapid response team on hand to get you to the heart of the matter. Our key strength is in our global capabilities. We can tap into an extensive network of trusted professional investigators based in most jurisdictions worldwide, enabling us to go almost anywhere a case takes us. Conflict International has decades of experience with a diverse range of skills among our team, developed from backgrounds in military and security intelligence services, as well as practice lawyers. Visit our website today at conflictinternational.com to find out more about our services. That's conflictinternational.com. Global reach, local knowledge.
And we're back. You're listening to or watching Answers Network. We are talking about various types of ritual abuse, sex trafficking, and things. And we're going to be talking about some of the therapies that can be done to help the victims. But before we go into the victims, let's talk about either yourself or the person like that, because I know that having worked these types of cases, it can be very taxing on those of us doing the rescue. You know, but we usually spend a relatively short period of time with the victim. It must be incredibly emotionally trying on those of you providing therapy for the victims. How do you personally handle this, you know, for yourself or those of you that are working with these people, for obviously putting in a lot more time to help them through this?
Well, I think, you know, for anybody who's just getting into the field, they're pretty much in shock by what they find. Mm-hmm. And you really do have to get past it. You have to really sense a call on your life to know this is something that you can do. But you need the tools. You need to understand what you're up against. It is complicated because these perpetrator groups relish the opportunity to create very complex internal structures so that survivors and therapists can't access them. And therapists get stumped and call somebody like me, or they go on message boards where other colleagues along with myself, will answer questions. But initially, you're really overwhelmed by it, and you feel, as a clinician, you never want a case like this again. You just never want a case like this again. But at the same time, when you begin to see progress, in normal recovery from, say, sexual abuse, and I'm not talking about perpetrators that are in groups from sexual trafficking or anything, but in normal, I hate to say normal, garden variety sexual abuse, but there are levels to this. You know, somebody who in your family who sexually abuses you, and that's the only person that does it. I don't ever want to minimize that because it's so incredibly destructive. But at the same time, as they recover, it's like going two steps forward and one step back, two steps forward, one step back. And they begin to start seeing the light and begin to recover, and they feel better and better with time. It's fraught with a lot of obstacles, but they still get there. With ritual abuse, which is basically mind control that's done by a religious group or with religious types of items and symbols, it's like one step forward, two steps back. So you feel like, as a clinician, you're not getting anywhere at all, and you get more confused by it. And you have to remember that these perpetrating groups are criminals, and they have a vested interest in making certain that you, as a clinician, will never figure this out, will never. But at the same time, you've got a human being in front of you who will not completely ever have perfect mind control. It's not going to happen. And as they get older, the mind control begins to fall apart. And so it's walking with that survivor, believing them, even though you feel like this can't be possible. You know, you just feel like, how could people do this? But walking with them and recognizing that, that these things do indeed happen. You may not understand it as a clinician, but this survivor, why would they be making these things up in this way? There's ways to be able to tell. As a clinician, over time, you get a lot of experience with it. And so the therapist who sticks with it, as they get more and more clients, which is what happened to me, when I first discovered my first client that I really knew had this happen, I didn't even know what it was. But people within the city, I'm in Michigan, where I am, started referring to me because people were starting to come out of the shadows. I even had the local major medical center here, the ER there, the psych ER, referring to me because they were getting people and they had heard that I was working with people. I was brand new at this, but they were figuring, okay, somebody in town knows about this, you know? So by the end of that first year, I had like 10 people. And I was absolutely overwhelmed by it. But I was beginning to see patterns. And that's what, and at the same time, I thought with these survivors, they are willing to come forward. And the least I can do is try to help them. I wasn't going to say, well, go someplace else. I had 10 of them. And so I had to figure it out. And so as I did, I began to see patterns, and I started searching out in a bigger net to be able to find therapists, researchers, organized abuse networks to be able to understand. I went to the police. I said, please show me, what are you looking at here? Is this real? And I'll be darned, they showed me crime videos of these ritual sites. And I just, my world just turned upside down. I thought, these people are not kidding. So I thought, you know, these are people that need help. And I have had 10 people, and I'm seeing patterns, And I'm going to keep going. And I'm going to push through this just like I did when I was dealing with death and dying. I thought, I can do this.
Right.
And it was really tough. But I emerged feeling like, okay, this is not rocket science, really. It's perpetrator groups and their horrible minds, yeah. And ways they do things. But there's ways to help these people recover.
Now, what are some of the ways in which, I mean, is there anything you can do to help? I mean, in regards to the families, I know that we would get calls where there was a concern that this has happened, mm-hmm. and that the family now wants to get their child back, even though they might be an adult. So their adult offspring, they want to get them back, but that they've seen the signs that pulled them away. Whereas it started out with, you know, they were hanging with a particular group, and then all of a sudden they were changing, and then all of a sudden the family became the butt of all bad things that's ever happened to them, and then they want to cut off all contact.
Mm-hmm.
What can you do for that family to help them?
Are you talking about sex trafficking specifically, or
not specifically sex trafficking? Because, as you know, but you know, some of these groups, you know, it's more like a cult type of thing to where they're bringing them in, and it might be sex. It might be that they're just working for them. You know,
right.
they're doing something. But you're right. Oftentimes it is sex trafficking, and oftentimes it would be with a female, and they feel that this is their new family, or that this person loves them, even though they're forcing them to have sex with other people. You know, this is one of the situations that for me as an investigator that we run into. The hard part is, you know, once they're found, you need to get them back into a mindset to where they don't take off and do this again.
Right. It's the mind control that you're right. seeing. And they've been programmed to return. That's the problem.
Yeah.
And it really takes people aware of that to bring in a clinician to help start that process to undo that mind control. So many people that I have met over the years that when I've talked to groups that do sex trafficking centers, mm-hmm. They're kind of in shock when they realize that there may be reasons why a lot of these people don't stay. Granted, you know, abuse, they can, you know, the perpetrators will lure them back and because they want them and all that. But then there's another element of the mind control that may have been put in there. Now, if this person, this abuse survivor, was swept up into the group at an older age, say as a teenager, or even like 10 and above or so, there's not going to be mind control that is flawless. You see the more flawless kind in early childhood. Where they were brought up into it, and there's tremendous efforts made to lock certain messages in and have abilities to access them when they need them. So I the people that are older, there's a lot of hope, and the people that are younger, there's a lot of hope as well, but it's different types of interventions that need to happen with mm-hmm. different groups. And the trafficking centers, it's still new. It's still new for them to understand even regular trafficking, because a lot of people don't stay. They foil the efforts of the helpers, and they return. And it's a complicated answer, but it takes really people that are very skilled in knowing how to reach the people that are older. And sometimes your trafficking centers, I think, need more clinical understanding to, and a lot of experience to intervene and to really dedicate a lot of time to be able to undo what's happened to them.
Well, and I would agree with that. And from what I've seen, I think besides very good therapy, I think that piggybacking job skills, in other words, setting them up when you, we've had situations in which we've rescued people out of human trafficking, and all the statistics show that if they don't get good therapy, if they don't learn job skills, a high percentage of them go right back into
that
same situation, and it's just heartbreaking. So again,
the people that have had ritual abuse and mind control from birth or early stages of childhood, it's not so much trying to find a job for them. They're often very skilled. Sometimes they are the brightest of the land, and they assimilate into society look like they're doing well, and you would never expect that they have anything like this in their background. That's what's so confusing and surprising when sometimes they start to have mental health symptoms that are odd, that don't quite fit some of the categories that we don't normally have in the mental health field.
Well, one of the things that I like on this show are the success stories. We're going to take another break in about 3 minutes. In the meantime, can you share with our viewers and listeners one of the success stories? Obviously, we're not using people's names and stuff, but, you know, a success story of someone who went through a horrific situation and through proper therapy and help, they've now learned to thrive.
Right. I've had a lot over the years, and as I've gotten more and more experience, I can intervene more quickly and understand what needs to happen. But it's still a work in progress all the time for these survivors. When perpetrating groups realize that the programming inside or the mind control inside is broken because of the work we do, they try to do more of it to reinstate it. And that accounts for abuse, violent abuse, other kinds of abuse that I won't even go into. And then they come back to me. And that's the heartbreaking thing. They keep coming back, which is important, obviously. But they come back and I realize, oh my gosh, you're paying for what's going on in our therapy sessions. You're trying to get out. You're trying to get out. And they are torturing you. And it's helping to build their courage and their determination and the fact that they are recovering more, that gives them that kind of resolve that the longer they continue to break down the programming, the more that these perpetrating groups get really scared because they could get nabbed for being a criminal and taken to court. Now, most of these clients don't ever go to court. They're too scared. The perpetrating groups will back off, but not always. So we keep working until they do, until they stop coming around, and until they stop luring the person back into the group. And it's heartbreaking to go through it because you realize they're going through a lot of hell. They're going through a lot of hell to get out, but they're so determined. And I want to paint that picture with them. You can do this. And this is how we're doing it. And take a look at where you've come from already, to giving them hope. And that's what I want to say to everybody's listening. There is hope. And it's a journey that you owe it to yourself to become the human being that you were meant to be, that God meant you to be. And there's no way that people should be able to control you like this.
All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, I'd love for you to share with us a little bit about the migration model. Okay. For everybody out there, you're listening to or watching Answers Network.
Having a teenager at risk who is going through a traumatic experience can be difficult on parents, siblings, and all who are working with that young person. No family should have to go through this process alone. Westshield Adolescent Services is here to ensure you don't have to. Many of the psychologists and psychiatrists we work with have spoken about the stress families go through. Not just the young person, but the parents, needing to get their child to a program where they can get the help they need. Westshield aims to lessen that stress. Every case goes through a thorough intake process with one of our knowledgeable, compassionate intake coordinators. We want to know the likes, the dislikes, and the fears of each child. This important information is taken into consideration when choosing the best suited team member for each individual teenager. Westshield agents come from all different walks of life, giving us a diverse group of team members to ensure a personalized, compassionate experience for every teenager. This allows us to make certain every young person we work with gets to the chosen program in the best possible state of mind. We contacted over 600 of the youth we've worked with in the past to see where they're at now. 97% of these individuals told us how much their lives had improved, that they had better relationships with their friends and families, had gone on to marry, have kids, and were now using the skills they learned in their program to raise their own children. Our role of transporting at-risk teenagers is a vital step in the process of ensuring a youth's ability to thrive in their new environment, and is a role we don't take lightly. The recovery process can be a long one, but like any journey, it started with a single step.
And we're back. You're watching or you're listening to Answers Network. When we went to break, I asked about the migration model and how this benefits the victims that you work with.
Okay. I always find the dissociative identity disorder in the more programmed types of survivors. And so we're talking about a system of personality parts internally that have been split and given different jobs. And what I came across was I asked one day a survivor, what does it look like inside when you look around? And I was talking to different personality parts, and they told me it's very dark inside. You would never want to be here. It's horrible. There's entities here, and they didn't use those words, but the real scary types of things that they saw in the shadows. And, so I said, well, do you see any light anywhere? And they would tell me, well, yeah, we heard that there's light. And we kind of heard about it, but we don't know where it is. And so then I challenged them and asked them if they are willing to go look and figure it out. Well, little by little, with time, I was able to engage the entire system to move into the light, into that space. Mm-hmm. What was interesting is that as they moved into the light, or into what I would call also God's kingdom, where there's goodness and wholeness, they began, the mind control fell off. It just dissolved. And it was puzzling to me. but at the same time, the evidence was clear over time that they were no longer plagued by the mind control. Not everybody came over, but was a process over a period of weeks or months as parts began to recognize that there's a better life over there. I want to get out of here. I can't stand it here. I don't want to be alone. I don't know, you know, where everybody went. It was stunning for me to find this. And I have been working with it now for 10 or 11 years. And it takes time. And I really have to know that person's system. And there are people that come to me who I've never had as a client. And I do that today. I don't have them as a client, but they have to come with a support person or their therapist. And we'll spend a few days and we'll have to understand, you know, what their system is like. And that particular support person or clinician has to have a pretty well-developed understanding of their system to help me navigate that with them. It's all voluntary. The survivor has to be willing, and they have to test me. You know, I mean, they don't know me from Adam, so they have to test me. And of course, I ask them to do that. And then it starts to change with them, and they may come back several times to get the whole process done, but it frees them from the control, and perpetrating groups do not like it. obviously.
Yes.
But it can only really happen with the ID clients because they have the parts inside that have split, and those are the people that perpetrating groups want to keep because they're so malleable and so controllable. So we basically foil their efforts.
All right. We are speaking with Eileen Aveni, and first of all, I want to let everybody know, if you would like to get in touch with Eileen, her website is www.ra-free.org. And Eileen, is there a better way or any other good way for them to reach you?
No, not right now. No, okay. I already get calls a couple times a week from everywhere in the world, mostly in this country. Okay. Asking for help, and there aren't enough therapists who know how to do the work, or they are already filled in their caseload. And so that is the reason why I'm writing a book, because every time I get off the phone with these people, I cry.
You know what? And actually, I'm glad that you brought that up. I wanted to be able to mention the book, because I had mentioned before that I think it's going to be out this winter. We're almost out of time. Just real quickly, tell us the name of the book.
It will be called Ritual Abuse and Mind Control: A Self-Help Guide for Recovery. I know that there aren't enough clinicians out there. And people can do some work on their own, or they can take the book to their clinician and work with it. I'm also in the fall, there's a book coming out that I have a chapter in that's my story that will be coming out.
Which is also this winter. So that'll be coming out in a few months. So we've only got about a minute, but what I want to do is, you mentioned, you know, there's not enough people out there, but I'm going to hand you a magic wand. What legal changes do you make happen to best help survivors now?
There needs to be no statute of limitations. there needs to be, I worked on laws, and I worked on a Michigan law, which did not pass, but we worked on it for a long time, but eventually, three other laws came along and took care of most of it, but there needs to be a description of rituals in it, different kinds of satanic rituals and various ways that are the abuse is done. There needs to be some evidence of DID in the patient, and they need to have specialists on that are organized abuse therapists on these legal teams who are rescuing to recognize what we're talking about. Those are the things that I would definitely say.
All right. And again, it's ra-free.org. If you're driving and you can't write it down, feel free to contact us at answers.network. We'll get you the information. We'll put you together with Eileen. Eileen, again, thank you so much for what you do. You're making a positive difference in the world. And again, if there's anything that I can do, please let me know.
Oh, thank you, Alan. I appreciate that. And I appreciate the work you're doing. This is tough, but it needs to happen.
Absolutely.
Appreciate it.
Thank you. And for everybody out there, if you're interested in seeing more content like this, please make sure to check out our other shows. You can do so on the Answers Network channel, the website, or any major social media platform. For everybody out there, thanks for tuning in. And just be good human beings. Know that there are things going on out there that are not good, but there are very good people trying to make a positive difference. So again, be with us every chance you get on Answers Network.
You're listening to Answers Network with Alan Cardoza, only on LA Talk Radio.